Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to episode 278 of the Barcelona Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Dan Hilton, and I am joined today by my old friend from Mezque Un Podcast, Rafa Aldamuy. This time, Rafa, you're flying solo. Last time, our collaboration was with your co-host in Julio, but Frances is away, Julio's away, Levon and Mia, they're all away, so it's just you and I today.
That's true. Thank you once again for having me here. It's an honor. Yes, Julio, life happens. He's busy with more important things right now than Barcelona. So it's me here alone. Again, thank you very much for having me literally right before the start of this messy last season. So I'm excited. I ain't gonna lie. I'm really excited for what the future holds.
Yeah. So Rafa and I today are going to talk a little bit of, we're doing the CVC deal, just a little bit, get into the minutiae of what could big picture affect Barcelona. And then of course, yes, as Rafa said, we are going to do the Real Sociedad preview. We're going to do a basic La Liga preview as well, a bit at the end. So that's what we have on tap today. And again, I thank Rafa for doing the show because, as a reminder, Mezque Un Podcast, that is in Spanish. So there's no rivalry. There's no competition. This is just an English-speaking Barca podcast and a Spanish-speaking Barca podcast, propping each other up and helping each other out. And speaking of helping each other out, Rafa, the CVC deal, as far as La Liga, Barca and Real Madrid, they're not really helping each other out. So the story here is Barca, Real Madrid, Athletic Club, and one club from Segunda, which it seems to be Real Oviedo, was the one to do that. And their fan ownership structure seems to be the reason for that. It seems to be confirmed at this point. So those are the four clubs that said no. And a reminder, too, I think I said it early in the week, the Athletic Club said no because they couldn't see the benefit of that infusion of cash because of the way that they go about their transfer business. So what are they basically said, what are we going to use this extra money on? It doesn't make any sense to give away our TV rights if we don't need that in that injection of cash. I mean, everybody could use cash, of course, after COVID. But Athletic Club, because of the big sales they made of Kepa and a few others in the prior years, they said, hey, we're actually okay in our standing right now. And we don't need the rest of La Liga getting this money to bring in all these transfers when we don't have that same luxury because of our own hubris of bringing in only Basque players. So yes, Athletic Club gets themselves into that mess. But as far as the CVC, before I go too far on my blah, 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 Rafa, how have you been feeling about the idea of the Super League and the CVC and the fact that you get the sense there are, I mean, especially with the comments that Tabas has made, there are no heroes in this story. And that is the great frustrating part here, that it is self-preservation in a post-COVID world for Barca, for Real Madrid, for La Liga, for the concept of a Super League to keep up with the Joneses. And yeah, I mean, how are you just you feeling about in the macro sense of where the clubs are at and where the league is at the moment?
Well, I'm with you in that aspect completely. This, everybody's looking out for themselves. That's the truth. And as soon as everybody gets that like through their heads, then the easier it'll be to deal with all these like Superliga, CVC and whatnot. That's the ugly truth of the football world. And I don't blame anybody. I don't blame either part because, again, everybody's looking out for themselves. Barcelona, Madrid, the rest of the big teams, then the teams that left the Super League once they heard and saw the backlash of it. I understand UEFA being the way that they are. They were trying to get the CVC deal. The rest of like the first and second division teams in La Liga that approved it because they need it. I understand Athletic Club Bilbao saying like, hey, we technically don't need this, we got a brand new stadium as well, because a bunch of that money was going to go to infrastructure. So we're like, yeah, we got our training ground done. We got our new really nice stadium. So yeah, thanks for no things, but this doesn't do anything for me. So at the end of the day, it is, that's how life works. Survival of the fittest. Everybody's looking out for themselves, whether you agree with one part or not. It's just, it is what it is.
Right. And Barca and Real Madrid, they opted out not because they didn't want that injection of cash. And it's not even necessarily about Super League, but it's that they did not want to hand over 8 to 9% of their TV rights or audiovisual rights for the next 50 years. That was the calculation that was made. We don't know how Spanish football, what it will even look like in 30 or 40 years. I mean, you go back into the 60s and the 70s and just imagine and try to comprehend what we're looking at. So basically, when you're speaking about audiovisual rights in this global world, you start the clock at, I'd say, what, when La Liga really hit screens in the UK in the late 90s, early 2000s, right around that era, you're speaking about a 20, 25-year window of our understanding of how important these broadcasting rights are to these clubs. So that said, seeing the writing on the wall of Barca and Madrid opting out, CVC allowed individual clubs to opt out and retain their own shares of their revenue, but they also would not receive the cash injection, which does make sense. And so Tebas, he made the comment that, quote, he doesn't know exactly what Barcelona are doing to lower their wage bill, saying that CVC money would have had around 40 million euros more and enough for Messi. So that's a little bit of spiteful commentary from Tebas. And the truth of that is questionable as well. For this money, 15% of that money could have been used to pay off debts, with 70 perfect for investment in infrastructure. The deal was 2.7 billion, is now down to 2.1 billion euros due to missing three major La Liga teams. But the other clubs in La Liga will get a bit of an injection to help them pay off their individual debts. And then again, a reminder that CVC would have received, and they will receive from these clubs, a share of audiovisual rights totaling about 8 to 9% total, which is said if the Super League ever happened, Barca and Madrid didn't want to be wrapped in that figure for decades when they would believe they could negotiate independently for much more. The other thing too is the injection of cash now that a club will receive won't be close to how much CVC will make in the decades off the club's TV rights. So I'm not taking this from a pro CVC approach. I'm saying from the perspective of CVC, obviously from their view, this was going to be a great deal because again, all they had to do was put a little money up front. And that's why Goldman Sachs at the 11th hour also jumped in to pay a portion of that investment, because that's what CVC is. Capital Partners is a private equity firm. So they're, you know, basically they go cash injections and hope they make the benefits on the back end. And so it isn't, I think, seeing the CVC deal, especially in the short term, it's another harrowing reminder that not to always make it more about the football, more than just the football, but a harrowing reminder that Spain's economy is not the same as other countries in Europe. And just looking up some of the numbers here, they were devastated by the global financial crisis. 36% unemployment in 2008. In the U.S., just for the context for our American listeners, the U.S. peaked at 10%. I mean, I know it affected my family personally about the financial global crisis and the recession and layoffs and whatever. And that was just 10%, 36% unemployment in Spain in 2008. And I know those figures don't exactly tell the whole picture due to total population, age of population, industry sectors. But you get the point that Spain did not financially recover even then, even 13, 14 years later than Germany did, than the U.K. did, than France did. Spain is just, a lot of those clubs are still dealing with massive, massive debt from the last 25 years. And that's one of the reasons why this was deemed illegal by the Spanish Football Federation, because it's going to make it even more difficult from, they want, that being the Spanish Football Federation, free movement. That's why they created all these different, more competitive, that's why the Primera Division now exists where Barça B is in. They wanted more competition there. And so moving from La Liga to Segunda Division to Primera Division, they want it to be easier, more seamless. But when certain clubs are getting a cash injection, they were uncomfortable with that idea. So Rafa, I've been speaking too long. If you have anything to throw in, I want to give a little bit of the backstory about why CVC in particular, that company, is a little bit worrisome. But first, yeah, I mean, what are you soaking in from all that? I mean, I want to wake you up.
No, Joe, no, just three things regarding all of that. At the end of the day, this is Barcelona and Madrid declined this deal because how we say in Puerto Rico, in rice and beans and in arroz y habichuela, if we just try to explain it like in black and white, they thought that even though they were going to get a little bit of like money injection, at the end of the day, it just wasn't worth giving up that 8, 9, 10% of whatever percentage it was for over 50 years, because they thought they would have their studies, their numbers and whatnot, that down the road, that's going to be worth way more than what they were going to get in return right now. Yeah, it would have been a short, it would be short, like beneficial short term, but long term, 50 years, they just didn't thought it was worth it. And let's be honest, CVC is an investment fund. An investment fund just doesn't put almost 3 billion million euros into something without thinking they're going to get way more down the road. So if they put, let's just think about it this way. If they put 2.7 billion euros into La Liga, it's because they think in 50 years, they'll get 4, 5, 6, 7 times more than that. That's just how it goes. So each part was looking out for themselves. And what you were saying for like the American speaking, like the US audience of this podcast, like look how far we've gotten in the last 10, 15 years. Even it was like the mid, like in Puerto Rico, we get, it's the same TV rights deals as the US. So it's the same thing. Like we, I was able to watch the Champions League on ESPN, ESPN Deportes for the most part, like the early 2000s and whatnot. But I wasn't able to watch La Liga. It wasn't until Gol TV got the rights that I was able to watch La Liga week in and week out. So I was able to watch the Champions League, but not constantly La Liga games and whatnot. And look how far we've gotten from that to today, where you literally can watch the Peruvian League online. There's something to watch, like the any league in the Turkish League. That to me, if you told me that 15 years ago, to me, I would call you crazy because that's just insane. So if that, look how much we've gone in the last 15 years. What's not, like, we have no idea how the world for Barcelona and Real Madrid, like TV rights wise, is going to look within the next 5 years, let alone the next 50. So like Florentino and Laporta, and I think rightly so from a business standpoint, look like, hey, we are a mega brand and we just don't see the benefits medium term, long term, and giving up these rights when we know our worth. And they know what the Barcelona and Real Madrid brand are worth global. So it's just again, I like to say it's just the ugly truth. They just don't see the benefits of it, and that's why they declined it.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Not to say I'm not defending Barcelona Real Madrid in this instance, but I think from to your point, I think I'm agreeing with your point more than I am in defending with Barcelona and Madrid for that decision, because you're right. When it comes to especially the digital initiative, as Laporta called it in his presidency, an emphasis on that is so important, because there's a little plug here, but I am going to be back on tomorrow and for live coverage on Sunday for Barca's Twitch channel. So I'll be on the official FC Barcelona Twitch channel. Yeah, it's all cool in that. But I'm a little older than some of our co-hosts. I mean, some of my co-hosts over there. And I didn't know Twitch existed, right? Well, it didn't exist even whatever it was, 6, 7 years ago or whatever. And then for me to try to understand, hey, there's this new platform, but how much power that platform already has. The first solo interview that Messi gave at PSG was with the Spanish Twitch streamer, Ibea. I mean, you got to, somebody got to correct me or help me with that. But yeah, that was the first individual interview he gave to a Twitch streamer, which is not to, it's not a disservice to the Twitch streamer. It's that like Messi's brand and Team Messi, they know the power of their next audience. They understand the frontiers that they have to go. And so like, yes, the digital rights, the broadcasting rights, the TV rights, and the access to those highlights are all such important factors. And yeah, and handing that over to CVC. Now I want to finally go why that deal in particular, that venture capital or private equity firm, whatever you want to say, why that's uncomfortable is CVC did own Formula One between 2006 and 2017. They paid $1.4 billion for a majority stake and made up to $3.5 billion. So yes, that's $2.1 billion in profit. That sounds pretty good to me. They put a gentleman named Bernie Ecclestone in charge. Now, he made certain decisions that made money and ultimately left the product much worse off. He was publicly dismissed on social media, and he also moved them from a free-to-air TV rights deal to a pay-to-view programming deal, which, as you know, if you're not prepared to make that jump and have basically a built-in infrastructure for pay-per-view, as we see, you know, professional wrestling or UFC and basically things that have always existed in a card format or a pay-per-view format, it can put you in a dire straits with a misconnection to your audience. There was also a huge lack of investment in promoting the sport. So this comes on CVC's end. And the difference is they owned Formula One as opposed to having a stake. They had the majority stake in Formula One. It was basically in their control as opposed to La Liga, where they were just going to inject that money in and expect the return because they only had 10% of La Liga. So there is a huge difference. But anyway, CVC also, their deal with Formula One led to less sponsors, which obviously with less sponsors leads to teams relying on more money coming straight from F1 to survive, which meant that the money was coming straight from CVC, which is why there was only enough for some and left other teams to go bankrupt. And that being teams of Formula One. So this is why there is a public lack of faith in CVC Capital Partners. They had a vampiric relationship with Formula One when they bought that majority stake. They made their money. And they left Formula One, they say, most Formula One fans have said that they left Formula One worse off. And so that is basically they also got into rugby, but as far as scaling marketability, as far as scaling that kind of money, this is CVC's other sports project. And if you're going to give them a grade on that, you give them a D-. Because yes, Formula One didn't go completely belly up, but almost everything CVC did in regards to Formula One didn't really help the sport at that time. And it took it certainly in a neutral direction, if not a negative direction. So the fear is that if CVC, even 10%, has hands in the Liga, that obviously they're just looking out for themselves. So they are not some white knight savior coming down from money heaven. They are here to be predatory on the rights of the Liga and take advantage of a league that does need desperately a cash infusion, as I said, based on sociopolitical and geopolitical financial factors that I'm putting myself to sleep, Rob, but we got to move on. We got to talk football, don't we?
No, yeah, I completely agree. But yeah, I'll just finish this off. And it's completely true. And again, obviously, this is a Barcelona podcast. So at the end of the day, just Barcelona did their numbers. They just don't see the benefits in accepting this. I saw I like analogies and comparisons. It was like, I think is it Snow White? When you get like the apple? That it looks good on the outside, but inside it's not necessarily that good for you. Again, it might be good for, I don't know, Osasuna, Real Sociedad, because everybody has different economic situations. But for Barcelona, it's just like in the current day and age that we live, where you were saying the whole Twitch thing. Like right now, people like Ibai was the guy, and like Auron Play is another insane Spanish streamer. They get more people watching them play Fall Guys or Among Us, any game that a lot of TV, like normal TV shows get. So you gotta adapt to the new technologies. And I think Barcelona and Real Madrid smartly know this and know the worth of their product. And that's why they declined, because they know that this is just the beginning of a whole new world of technology.
Yeah. Well, from new school to old school, one of the better old school ways of making money is to have, we'll say, culés in seats. And that, of course, is a play on words there. So Barca were allowed the Camp Nou to have 30,000 people for the match. 15,280 socios as of Wednesday. So this is now 2 days dated, asked for a ticket. The attendance is usually down at the start of most seasons due to vacations, plus COVID definitely being a factor. But I also want to correct, there's this the whole thing about how socios have disconnected, they don't care, whatever. But there's a big distinction between the season ticket holders. That's so it's not just socios that have turned their back on the club. It's that season ticket holders, for a variety of reasons, 15,000 of them, of people just not wanting to go, or at that time not even having signed up. And now, but the next, they had 5 days as well between that announcement when it all went viral and all that stuff with that number, between now and then, to also get a ticket and sign up. So, I mean, a reminder too, that they would fill that in minutes if those 30,000 seats were open to the public. Minutes, seconds, they would fill those 30,000 seats. So we talked plenty with Frances about this in years past, but the actions, even if we're to read more about this, the actions of those socios and season ticket holders in Catalonia are often dictated by much different motivations than the ones even I may have, or fans who watch on TV might have here, where we, again, a lot of it's not that we don't know, but everybody has their own reasoning. Again, the majority of socios are not elderly, but they're not on the young side, very rarely, because they're passed down, not even through family, but it takes sometimes decades from those waiting lists to get a season ticket holder. A lot of your season ticket holding socios wind up being older. So there are fears of COVID and the Delta variant. And again, this is the time when they're on their vacations and they're enjoying their time, and maybe not Ibiza today, but you know, all over Spain. Spain's a beautiful country that if you can go on vacation for a weekend to Granada in August, you're going to go before the, not that it gets cold in Barcelona, but before the work year begins, if you will, in September and all that, especially with those industries. So once again, it's one of those things where we want to try to connect a direct correlation between Messi leaving and the Barcelona fans and socios have turned their back on the club. And they might be frustrated with Laporta, and they might be frustrated at Messi. We all are. We're all hurting. We're all broken. So yes, a lot of people could be not going to the stadium because they don't want to see this. But to draw a direct correlation and not try to assume that there's a lot of nuanced factors and every socio is different is a bit unfair to the general narrative. I think it's unfair to just throw that out there and say, oh, people stop caring.
Thank you so much for that explanation, Dan, because I completely agree with you. And sadly, I've seen on social media, Twitter, the easy thing to do is just blame this on, oh, Messi's gone, nobody wants to watch Barcelona anymore, and that'll get you a bunch of likes and retweets. But like you said, I think you explained it perfectly. This is a sum of all parts. Historically, even with Messi, there's been time matches in past seasons, of course, in August, that the attendance has been really low, like 50, something like that. So historically, we got to understand what you just said, like the cultural part of it. A lot of people in Spain are on vacation, not necessarily outside of Spain. They do like inside of Spain, but they go to other places like near like Sevilla, Menorca, and places like that, beautiful places. So that's one thing. Again, we're still in the middle of a pandemic. There's a Delta variant. There's a this variant and whatnot. So I think what you, again, perfectly explained, the season ticket holders, what we like in Spanish, los abonados, los socios abonados, they tend to be older for a bunch of reasons. Again, you perfectly explained them. Like I had season tickets, I'll just leave it at that, during the 14-15 season with Julio. And we got to experience the whole Camp Nou experience, not just going as a tourist, but like living the entire season, like getting to know all the people around you who were the same ones for the most part. And you got to see the season ticket holder is a very old Barcelona fan because of X, Y, and C that you also explained. So they might still have that fear, and rightly so, of COVID. And then on top of that, of course, Messi leaving could and probably played a part of it, but I just don't think it's one. It's just a sum of all things, and then you get the perfect recipe for not necessarily a great attendance so far.
Yeah, if November comes around, Barcelona are winning, Barcelona are contending for the Liga trophy, and you know, for some godforsaken reason, the human race has figured out how to deal with COVID and get itself vaccinated all over and vaccinated, distributed, blah, 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 blah. Like, again, non-football related things, then the Camp Nou will be full. If they opened it up and everyone was safe to go and Barcelona are winning, it's going to be opened up and there's not going to be an issue. And yeah, it's even depending on the night. When my wife and I went back in 2017 on Saturday afternoon, which usually Saturday nights are the big ones, or Sunday nights are the big ones. But Saturday afternoon, there were a lot of people there, kids, but there were some empty seats, sure. But then Tuesday night was Sporting CP Champions League, and there were more people at La Boqueria on Las Ramblas than there was heading to the train station with us, you know? And then that's just the way it may be from between a Saturday and a Tuesday, and it who knows? But anyway, the big match now, and the one that I hope is full with 30,000 people, is the one against Real Sociedad. So we are about 48 hours away from the match, and it seems like, Rafa, that Memphis Depay and Eric Garcia will be registered. I mean, at this point, based on some of the stuff that's coming out of the Catalan press, right, your head says that, I mean, we have to trust the people we trust, so he and Garcia will be registered, but our heart says, I'm not sure about that, right? Until he was given the number 9 shirt, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. Remember, Luis Suarez, because of the transfer ban at the time, he didn't even play until January. So Barcelona have survived not being able to register people before. Aguero won't be registered because he'll be missing 10 weeks anyway, so just roll your eyes on that one. And it is worrisome that Aguero, he might be completely cooked, which is a bummer because he's 33 and you think that he wouldn't be totally done yet, but hey, injuries add up. And yeah, I mean, if Garcia is registered or not, it does stink for him. But with Pique, Araujo, Lenglet, technically Umtiti, Mingueza coming back in September, and even Arnau Camacho if he needed, and actually I should say De Jong as well, Barca in theory could survive with that center back group until January if there was something with Eric Garcia. But there's no replacement in Memphis Depay, cannot be registered. Barcelona have a problem on their hands, but again, it seems like this might all be crying for naught. But I mean, after this last week, we're traumatized, Rafa. Is anything believable?
Hey, I don't blame anyone for being pessimistic, traumatized. I completely understand, even though I'm optimistic. We'll get to that a little bit later. But yeah, we've read today from the Catalan press that apparently the club told them, different sources, that they're confident Memphis and Eric Garcia will be registered before Sunday's game against Real Sociedad. But allow me, after this week, that until I see an official statement that, hey, Eric Garcia and Memphis were able to be registered, I'm going to keep my guard up because I don't want to get hurt again, Dan. So I got my guard up. And I want to, because especially Memphis, I think I don't think there's any debate that if we have to choose, obviously, let's say we can only register one for Sunday's game, it's obvious that it'll be Memphis because of how important he's been throughout this entire preseason. So at least for me, and I think that's the sentiment like you have and a lot of coolers have, that until we see an official statement, we're just going to keep our guards up because we don't want to get hurt again. We've been hurt this week. So
yeah. Well, Memphis or not, Barca are playing Real Sociedad. So I usually end with this part. We'll do the preview for La Real in a minute, but I want to start with the Barca side of this preview. Can you give me your starting 11 for this one? And then we kind of work our way backwards as to why you chose that and the direction that Ronald Koeman should probably go in against Real Sociedad.
Sure. Are we going to have Memphis is going to be registered for this or not?
Yes, Memphis and a no Memphis, because I think that just swaps out one player unless it changes your whole team formation. But to me, it's just...
No, not necessarily. So I'll include Memphis.
New number 9.
So I think obviously Neto is going to start. Ter Stegen is in the final stages of his recovery. And then I think the back four will be Pique and Araujo. I think Serginho Des will get the nod over Emerson to start the season. And Jordi Alba will obviously get the nod ahead of Alejandro Valdés for obvious reasons. I think the midfield will be Busquets. I think Frenkie, by the looks of it, he's been shown training with the team, even though he was a little bit injured. I don't know if it was against the Red Bull Salzburg or Stuttgart, but I think he'll be in. I think the biggest question in the midfield is whether, we've read reports, if Pedri will start or not. And I think that could be the question mark in the midfield. Will Koeman put Pedri in after playing 100,000 games in the last year? So will it either be Pedri or Sergio Roberto, or will Demir get the nod in the midfield like we saw against Juventus? I think it'll be either Pedri or Sergio Roberto. I don't think Koeman will go and put Demir in the midfield. And then up top, I think it'll just be Griezmann. I think it'll be Braithwaite, and I'm I'm going to be optimistic, and I think we're going to be able to register Memphis. So I think up top, it'll be the same trio that we saw against Juventus.
Interesting. So I agree with your back line. I don't think there's any debate on the left-footed thing. Araujo and Piqué, they're just leagues ahead of Umtiti. And Lenglet, even if he wasn't injured, I think he's one of those ones that behind the scenes, and I know he's injured, but just like Neto and just like Brathwaite, that's one of the guys that I think Barcelona need to be on the phone about. I know that you'd prefer to get rid of Coutinho and Umtiti, but you've got to be, Barcelona should be desperate to get rid of anybody they possibly can, who's obviously not one of the untouchable young post under 23 players. Happy 22nd birthday to Ricky Puig, by the way. But unfortunately, being 22, he's not going to get him to start. I agree with you in the midfield. Two of the three of Pedri, De Jong, and Roberto, based on injuries and availability for Pedri and De Jong. I mean, if all three are healthy, don't worry. We're going to see Pedri, De Jong, Busquets in the midfield quite a lot this year. Don't worry if we don't get to see it for game one. So I do expect Roberto to start. But does he start next to Pedri or De Jong? Again, that's based on availability of the other two. And then for the front three, I said it on Monday, and I'll repeat it again, that to me, it's either Brathwaite out and Memphis in, or Brathwaite obviously starts because Memphis is registered, and then you have a much bigger discussion point. But I think Demir needs to start. And I think he starts on the right wing, not in the midfield. Even though he started in the midfield against Juventus, I think even in La Liga, Demir can start on the right wing, and you don't really give up, especially with the overlapping runs of Dest. Demir can cut it. I mean, just stay in. And yeah, it's a learning experience for him, but he was more impactful. He had more progressive dribbles. He was just statistically and eye test wise more impactful against Juventus and against Red Bull Salzburg than Griezmann was. And so Griezmann starting no matter what, 100% chance, 120% chance Griezmann starting. That's not a knock on Griezmann. That's to say that if Demir is having that kind of impact, we've seen that Koeman, if a young player has an impact, he plays him. And he might be stubborn about others, and you might argue that guys are making impacts and they're not getting time. But if you make the kind of impact that Demir has had in his starts, and he's also started in the preseason, he started all but one of those matches. And again, it's a reminder that Koeman seems to found his, not even flavor of the month, but the player that he is expecting big things from, and that is Youssef Demir. So I think it needs to be either Griezmann, Brathwaite, Demir, or Griezmann and Memphis and Demir. The spacing with Brathwaite to me against Juventus, just, it didn't work. I said it on Monday as well, but it's either Griezmann as a false nine, kind of dropping in deeper and defending almost an attacking midfielder, and then Memphis coming out on the left wing, or if Memphis trying to hold the ball up, if Real Sociedad are going to play that way, Memphis holds the ball up in the middle and Griezmann basically cuts in off the left wing where he's less comfortable. But there's a lot of switching going on there. You usually see in the buildup, as Memphis drops deeper, Griezmann kind of runs in behind, but he runs in through the half spaces in the central channel. So don't think of it as Griezmann on the left, Memphis in the middle. It's more like both of them on two-thirds of the field, and then Demir kind of is given the right wing to overlap with Dest, and then kind of Alba. Really, the question with that front three comes in with how is Alba going to make an impact if you don't have, what's his name? He wore number 10 for Barca for a long time. The guy who was always at the... It was the guy that Alba liked to cross into. I can't remember his name. He's an Argentine player.
I think he's from Argentina, but
if Alba doesn't have a new...
I don't remember his name.
Right. So if Alba can't cross into Messi at the penalty spot, well, he's going to have to find basically a new thing to do with the run that Griezmann doesn't make. Memphis and him, I think their combinations were pretty good. I was actually happy with their chemistry, and we'll see if they can build on that. But yeah, it all comes down to Memphis. But as far as Real Sociedad, that's a tough test, Rafa.
No, I completely agree. And then, let's say, I think the front three that I said, I think that's the one, but I wouldn't be surprised if Koeman ends up going with the front three that you mentioned. That's, if I'm not mistaken, that's, they played together against Red Bull Salzburg. And what you were saying, that's exactly what they did. Like Memphis and Griezmann, technically Griezmann started as a false nine and Memphis on the left, but they were completely intertwined. Like they were changing positions left and right. And I think it was Demir's goal. It was basically Griezmann did an overlapping run, Memphis with a great through ball, and then Griezmann crossed the ball for a Demir tap-in. So I think I wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if Demir gets a nod ahead of Braithwaite, because I think alongside Gavi, they've been the two like young standouts of the preseason for Barcelona. So that's something that could possibly happen. And then again, yeah, like even though it's going to be at the Camp Nou and we're going to have fans back, so that's going to help. Going against Real Sociedad is not easy peasy to start of the season. given how we've come to the current state. Like, literally, like, Messi left a week ago. And now we got to start the season. We hope, but we don't know yet if we're going to be able to have Memphis for that first game, who's been such an important part of the preseason. So it's something that's like, you would have preferred to start the league against a lesser team, to put it nicely, because Real Sociedad are a very good team, are a good team that can play from the back, a very attacking team that if you're not careful, it doesn't matter if you're playing at the Camp Nou, they're going to pressure you and you're going to be in danger. So it's going to be a really, really tough start of the season for Barcelona.
Yeah, and we know that Real Sociedad on the road up in San Sebastian is always much, much harder, but this is at home. These are the points you need to get early in the season. And for Real Sociedad, the opposite of Barcelona. Barcelona has had a bit of upheaval, but Real Sociedad has basically stayed the same. They've kept the same team, for better or worse. And Imanol, the coach, basically brings back his whole team. The only difference is being the backup goalkeeper and the backup left back. I mean, what a great transfer window that must be. But, that's the double-edged sword for Real Sociedad and actually most of La Liga. As I was looking at the transfers in and out, so last year for the YouTube channel, I made this New Faces in La Liga video. And I usually do that every year, or it might have been 2 years ago. Time's a flat circle. So whatever year it was, I made this New Face in La Liga because there's always new transfers coming in, whether it's Eden Hazard or whoever it may be. And it seems like everybody has somebody, right? Any La Liga team has a new player they've tried to inject. But other than, Eric Lamela, is one of the biggest injections into La Liga, right? That's what we're saying, that he's one of the top, as I'm going through the list, he's one of the top five best new players in La Liga. Spanish teams had no money. That's the whole thing going back to the CBC thing. There is no money for transfers. So for better or worse, we also see that we're only able to reinforce at goalkeeper and left back, just at the backup positions where they lost those other positions. Where they lost the players in those positions. So last year they finished fifth, 15 points behind fourth place Sevilla. So that's a pretty big margin between fourth and fifth. 1 point above Real Betis, who oddly finished sixth with a 0 goal differential, while La Real finished with a plus 21 goal for differential. So to tell you that stat matters or means something. So that was their plus 21 goal differential was one better than Sevilla. And a reminder too, that Real Sociedad fifth was actually a little bit unfair, even though they were 15 points behind Sevilla. Their first half of the season between August and January had them deserving of a top even three spot, but obviously they fell off quite a bit and different competitions kind of caught up with them. And a reminder too, that they did win the Spanish Super Cup. So La Real is a good team and Isak is 22 next month. And he's a player that those who watch the Liga quite often say, hey, why worry about Haaland when Isak is in the Liga, right? That he's available for much cheaper next summer. So instead of going Haaland fishing again, why don't you look at Isak, who'll be 22 next month, and Orzabal. So I don't want to talk about transfers because Barca can't afford you and me yet. But Orzabal still not even in his prime yet. And to me, for Real Sociedad, the reliance on David Silva, who is 35 now, going to be 36, that is a worrying sign. But behind him, they basically set up this huge defensive midfield of Guerrera, Mikel Moreno, Zubimendi, Guridi, and club captain Iramendi, who is never healthy. He's always injured, but they basically set up a gigantic defensive core. You can't play them all at the same time, yes, but they just put all these legs behind David Silva and say, hey, old man, go to work. And then their back line is fine. They're not particularly fast, but neither is Brathwaite in case he starts. So I think the two ends, the center backs pairings and the front group for Barcelona, we'll see what happens there. Then the inverse for Real Sociedad. I think in the midfield, it's going to wind up being quite even. And then this will be decided, I think, on the margins.
Yeah, they're giving Silva the Juventus treatment that they gave Pirlo when they surrounded him with Marquisio, Vidal, Pogba, and everybody. Basically, it was just like, hey, Pirlo, don't worry about defending whatsoever. We got like five guys besides you that will do all the tackling. So just focus on the offensive end. So I think that's a very smart thing on their end, because obviously when Silva has the ball at his feet, things happen. He's a magician, even at 35, 36 years old. So by doing that, they're just ensuring that, they hope that by doing that, they're going to ensure that Silva stays fit and can give them more playing time throughout the entire season. But again, yeah, like if they got really good veteran players, very good young players, and Isak, Oyarzabal, he came back from the Olympics. I don't know on their end how they're going to treat his return if they're just going to plug him back in or not. But obviously, if he plays, a very dangerous player that's cost a lot of trouble for Barcelona during the past few years. So it'll be a really hard test. I think Barcelona are up for it. I'm very optimistic. But if we don't come out focused whatsoever, it could be a long afternoon, night/night.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first match of every season always does have that extra fury, that extra fire, that extra something, because it's the culmination of all these expectations. And it's weird because the expectations, obviously, for Barcelona, I was reading some of the season previews, and Sid Lowe and Sam Marsden, so that being a national reporter and then a local Barcelona correspondent, they both said that they thought that Barca would finish first in the Liga. And, you know, it's so funny because if you ask Culés are saying that obviously Atletico Madrid are going to repeat. And if they don't, Real Madrid obviously are going to have the legs to repeat. And yet the two experts said it was Barcelona because they're looking outside of the internal strife. Yes, you'd think that a club that would take this kind of trauma is not going to be able to get over the line. But you look at how deep they can be and the possibilities. And a reminder, too, that it's going to feel like the sky is falling. I mean, God forbid, we also see Dad come out, just punch Barca in the mouth. Barca loses 3-0. They don't have Memphis registered and everything is on fire, right? Messi's gone. It's cataclysmic. And then not to say that Memphis would be able to be registered later on, but the inverse of that is, let's say Memphis is registered, sure. And even if they lose 3-0 in that case, and then Fati comes back in October and starts scoring, and Dembele comes back at the end of September and gives you a potent front line, and then you're finally able to potentially get off salary in January. I could be talking to you in February and March and saying, hey, of course, Barcelona first. Look at the depth they have. Look at the way they rebound against Messi, right? And so, yes, people know who listen to the show. You listen. One of the reasons I think people listen to the show is because I'm undyingly, unnervingly optimistic. But that's what I will continue to be. Looking at all of the under 23 players in the Liga, no one touches Barcelona. It is not close. Real Madrid has half the young players of quality. I mean, and even the player that Fede Valverde that destroyed Barca in the El Clasico 2 years ago, he had such a down season last year. He was barely getting into a rotation that is now much, much, much older. That being in Modric and in Toni Kroos. I was having a conversation with a guy who he leans Real Madrid more than Barcelona. And he was just telling me how great Luka Modric is. And I said, Modric is 36 though. I just want to remind you of that the future of your midfield is 36 years old. And that was a point when we were already, I mean, by that time at 36, Xavi and Iniesta were already in Japan and Qatar respectively. So a reminder too, that Modric is, I mean, but he was better than Kroos last year. He was the better of the two.
He was. And I'm like you, I like to look at things glass half full all the time. And I know that right now, because of the whole Messi leaving thing, like the majority of like Twitter Barca and whatnot and the whole Barca fan base are very pessimistic. But I agree with Samuel Marsden and Sid Lowe. And I was talking this to Julio yesterday via WhatsApp. We both think we have, like compared to Madrid and Atletico Madrid, Barcelona has an insane squad. Yes, we just lost the best player in the world. Of course, that's going to hurt. But if you just take that out of the equation and you analyze our squad versus Real Madrid and Atletico Madrid, I think Barcelona has the better squad by far. And if we're talking about a young core, there was so much talk the past few years because that was the strategy Madrid were taking, buying really young players in hopes of, like, let's say we just bought him, they bought him for 10, 15 million in hopes they would end up being the next world superstar. And for the most part, that strategy hasn't worked at all for them, and they're still relying, what you were just saying, on the same midfield, Modric and Kroos, who are 100 years old. Yes, they're really good still, but it's normal that a 35-year-old, 36-year-old, they're going to have short bursts throughout the season in which they're going to look amazing because they're still great players, but you can't expect Modric and Kroos to be at a level 10 from start to finish because that's just not realistic. So they haven't done it. Well, they've done things. It just hasn't worked out the way they've wanted. And I think Barcelona's young core, I'm not even talking about La Liga. I think it is probably, you can make an argument, it is the best young core in all of Europe. Like all the young players that are in the team that are coming up, the likes of Gavi, Nico, Alejandro Valde, things like that. Even Collado, who can help out. I think we have the best young core available. And if Laporta does the right thing from now onward, obviously the economic situation is really bad. But, and again, I don't want to talk about transfer rumors and whatnot, but if down the road things get a little bit better economically and you're able to sprinkle really good signings with this young core, I think the sky is the limit for this team. And I like, just if you're going to go real quick, Ter Stegen is still Matt Young, top five goalkeeper in the world. Top three, it depends who you ask. We got Sergiño Dest, Emerson, Araujo, Mingueza, Eric Garcia, Alejandro Valde. You got Frankie de Jong, who technically is now one of like all the veterans, quote unquote. He's still like 22, 24, whatever he may be. Ricky Push, Pedri, Nico, Gavi, up top. Memphis is 27. He won't fit technically in the young core, but he's entering the prime of his career. We got Ansu Fati, Dembele is still young. You got Demir, Collado. Honestly, I think it's insane, the quality. And I hopefully I can, this optimism can just, like, I can transfer this to the screen for everybody. But I think, and again, I know we're all Barcelona fans and we got Barcelona podcast, Spanish, English. But when I analyze Barcelona and anybody else, even though I got a Barcelona flag and scarves behind me, I like to take my Barcelona hat off and then analyze this as objective as I can, because I don't want to come here and tell you, oh, Barcelona are the best when they're not. I don't want to say, oh, our left back, not saying Jordi Alba, just X, Y, and Z, is the best in the world when he might or might not be. I like to be objective as much as I can. So I'm saying this from the bottom of my heart, as objective as I can be. I genuinely think we have the best squad in the Liga, in the La Liga, and arguably the best young core in all of Europe. So I think we got reasons to be optimistic, Dan.
Of course. And I think the only fallacy, not to be a bit of a downer, but the only fallacy of youth is the thing that I seem to repeat way too many times every show or way too many times every week, is that because progress is not linear, that's why Fede Valverde, Real Madrid thought they were in great shape. And then he takes, not that he took a step back, but the Don just didn't trust him in the same way and he didn't have the same importance. And now Ancelotti is left with a player that is less than he was a year prior to. And same thing with Rodrigo and Vinicius Jr. They do a job, but they have not broken into that, you know, top five young winger in the world or top 10, where that's why Real Madrid put that kind of money investment in them. And the same thing goes for Fati, that if Fati is injured in the way that we expected that he is going to be, and that might derail his career in the way that it very well could happen and likely does historically happen. Fati was on a projection. He was projected to be a top five future winger or striker or whatever forward, you know, a mass forward in the world within 5 years. And that was the expectation. Pedri is on this path to be arguably a top three or five midfielder in the world in 5 years. And they're on those paths, but that path is not laid out in linear progression. It doesn't always work that way. And Dest, I could have told you when they signed him that Dest was, to me, a top 10 young right back under the age of 20. I mean, he was one of the most promising that anybody had. And we'll see how he develops. We'll see how he improves. And these players do have to continue to improve. Same thing with Araujo. If Araujo is just what he is physically, he's one injury away because of his inability to play the ball. He's one big injury away, and he's had a lot of nagging injuries, but he's one big injury away from just not being the same player. And if he can't rely on his physical tools, what does he truly add to Barca? So I just want to say, like, every young player has this cataclysmic, or I mean, yes, injury, sure, but they all seem to have one thing that says, hey, are they going to be able to break into that next one? And then for Atleti, the pros and cons that Rodrigo De Paul is even another upgrade in their midfield. He's another really good piece that Simeone excited about. But the reminder, too, that while they kept most of their squad and didn't really bring, other than DePaul, they didn't really bring much in, they relied on Luis Suarez to win them games late quite a lot last year. And I could easily see Atleti be the same kind of team and still win, still be better than Barca on the day, still be better than, well, they have trouble against Real Madrid, but still, they could still beat Barcelona, but wind up over the course of a season. It's a marathon, a reminder. And then they don't, if Luis Suarez is a half step slower this year, and he doesn't finish those 85th minute goals, or he doesn't score in the 88th minute this year, well, then Atleti aren't going to win the title. And that's why I think Barca, there's a way. And the other institutional thing too, is with Ancelotti coming to Real Madrid, it seems like we spend the whole year going on about Ronald Koeman, if he's the right man for the job. And we don't talk about him anymore. And Ronald Koeman is now in his second season while Ancelotti is retaking over that project. And Diego Simeone has been there a long time with the same players, and that's a similar voice. So I think as far as even the coaching perspective, Ancelotti, I think, is a better manager than Koeman, and I think Diego Simeone is a better manager than Koeman. But there's something about Koeman's cult of personality at the moment that might be able to rescue Barca in a way. Now, I want to do a quick season preview. Let's start at the bottom here. Basically, quick off little things for you, Rafa. Who stays up and who goes down? Do you have the three, or do you want me to give you the list of... I mean, I think basically there's a top eight and there's a bottom 12. That's how I kind of... There seems to be a cutoff here. So do you want me to list you the 12, or can you just kind of get them off the top of the dome?
Give me the list. I'm looking at it right now as well, because obviously they don't want to get anything wrong. But to be fair, it's just that I think... I'll make an exception. I was going to say that for the most part, the ones that went up from the second division, they tend to be the ones that the next year go down as well. But honestly, Espanyol, as much as it pains me to say this, they were amazing last year in the second division. So I don't see them just quickly going back down. But I would say, like, I know I'm taking the easy way out, but I would see like Cadiz going down, maybe Elche going down. And then Rayo and Elche. I think, honestly, it'll be between them. I know it's not popular to say that I think Espanyol will stay in the first division as a Barcelona podcast. But I'm like PK. I like to have them in the first division. It's more fun when they're here.
I agree.
Than when they're not, yes.
Fun. Yeah, rivalry's more fun. I agree. Yeah.
So when they went down, yeah, it was – as a Barcelona fan, we can make fun of them. Oh, yeah, you went down, blah, blah, blah. But for the most part, I'd rather have them in the first division than go back down again. I thought they were really, really good. It's just one of those teams that, like, Bielsa's leads when they went up to the Premier League. They had a fantastic run in the second division, and I think that translated into – not suffering for the most part in their first season back in the top flight. So I think that'll be the same with Espanyol. And I would say like Cadiz, like Elche, Levante, and maybe Rayo. I think those will be like, or even Mallorca. I'll add Mallorca to that list. I think I have like a five candidates to go down.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Espanyol's one either. I think you're right. I mean, between RDT, Real de Thomas is very good. They were able to hold on to him, which is really, really big. And then looking at the rest of their strike force, even Javier Puado is a young player. Mateus Vargas, even he had a low year. And they have a lot of young players. Nico Melamed is a pretty good midfielder. Paul Lozano. So they do have pieces, certainly, to stay up in the Liga. And I think just looking at quality, yeah. I mean, looking at talent and quality, Espanyol has enough there. And I think you're right about the names you threw out there. You know, there are surprises for me if they got pulled down there. In my top eight, I did put Athletic Club, but also if Athletic Club, all we know is they won't get relegated, but they could also finish 16th. That is an Athletic Club thing to do. But I put them in my top eight just with the assumption that they'll be closer to the top than they will the bottom, but who knows? That said, Granada is my one wild card this year. I think they're going to be insanely intriguing. It's not just the Manchu thing, who we have never seen in the first division, but Granada with the new manager and just a new style. And I really like the way that they played last year and they seem to know who they are. As I had spoken about in the years past, when they went down last time in the second division, there was an issue with ownership. There was an issue with just all the things behind the scenes. They were trying to throw money, just like Malaga did years ago. They were trying to kind of throw some money at a problem and hope it goes away, and that got them relegated. Now they've decided not to say that they're not going to spend money, but they decided to kind of build from the ground up. And Granada, when they do succeed, their fans are there to support them, much like Cadiz. And I think that I hope they have that secret sauce. I'm excited to watch Granada this year. I'm very excited to watch Celta with Koudé, the things that he did with that squad. They're all out attacking, and it's finally working because they're now defending a little bit for the first time in like 5 years, hopefully. So I'm just hoping they don't regress. Celta is a fun one. Galicia, having a big presence in Galicia in the Liga with Deportivo La Coruña, who is historically the bigger one, while they're, I mean, what are they in the third? You know, with all these new divisions, they could go down to the 12th division next year, whatever it is, but they're in trouble. But Celta is doing the Galicia region proud. And then Cadiz, as I said, I missed their fans last year. They'll be there this year with their fans, with that yellow army. I'm excited to see them. Espanyol, I think, stays up. Osasuna has some really good young players and old players. They've got a good mix. Osasuna, I trust. Yeah, and then Levante, and dare I say Valencia, but Levante, Valencia, Hadafe, Alaves, Elche, Mallorca, Rayo Vallecano. So I think I extended it to seven, didn't I? I think I pulled Levante in there. But yeah, Levante, I think it's going to take a step back. They're less talented now. Alaves is obviously, they just don't have the top level talent. They were worried. Hadafe are in free fall, it seems like. And now we're going to have to hope that Carlos Alenia can rescue them. But I think that they tried to make a few adjustments, but I'm not sure. Valencia, you know, Yusuf Musa, the American guy. Well, he's not really American, but yes, he plays for America. So they have a lot of young talent, but Valencia seemed to have just so many issues behind the scenes that there can be a dumpster fire. And then Elche, I don't know how Elche stayed up last year. Their squad is a Segunda Division squad. They have a second division squad. Elche managed to stay up. I don't know how. If I had to pick anybody, Elche is the one team who I think is going to finish last. And then Mallorca, I always root for Mallorca to stay up. They're a fun island. There's just something different about their stadium. They've got a fun atmosphere about it. So, and I think they've got some good history too. But Mallorca seems to not ever be focused enough on the Liga, but I don't know if they have enough talent either. I think just financially, they haven't really, remember they were down in the third division 2 or 3 years ago. So, or 4 years ago, rather, or five, whatever it is now. They've gone from third division, second division, first division, second division, third division. Yeah. So there you go. 5 seasons ago, third division. They've never really recovered yet. And then Rayo Vallecano, I think we saw in Copa del Rey, they are some of their parts. They may not have top level talent, but they have a good structure. And so I kind of trust them, but I also think talent could bite them in the rear end. So there's my little preview here. You have anything final to add, Rafa, about a preview? It could be first team. It could be anything.
Basically that I'm just crossing my fingers because I am such a believer of Ansu Fati that obviously this is a big if because he suffered a really important injury. But why I'm optimistic is even before that, Ansu also suffered, he broke his leg, the tibia and peroné, way before that. And he came back from that and was looking amazing before his knee injury. So obviously that's a big if because we don't know yet how he'll come back, his form, how long it'll take to regain it and whatnot. But if all things are good, which we hope they will be, I think that there's just some players that are like they're touched with like a magic wand, like the chosen ones. And I'm not saying, of course, he's going to be as big as Messi and whatnot, because that would be insane. But I think if he comes back well from that injury, he could well be the one that, quote unquote, leads us back to the promised land. Obviously, I won't say that it'll be the same amount of trophies and with Messi, Iniesta, Xavi, all that generation. But I think we could have a potentially Ballon d'Or candidate if he comes back perfect from injury and starts playing the way he was before he got injured. So I just want to leave a positive thing to end the podcast on my behalf, because I genuinely believe so much in Ansu Fati.
Yeah, I agree with you. Fati is the key. I've been saying it for weeks and months, and I'll continue to say it until we see how he recovers and what he's up to. But yes, Fati to me is the key. So yeah, please give Rafa a follow. You can hit the link in the show notes to follow him on Twitter. He's a fun follow, and remember, it comes out occasionally. They've got some busy people on their side too. You know, no shade at Frances, no shade at Julio. We thank them for listening. So, he's got some busyness on his side too. But check out Mesquite Podcast. Go back and listen to some of their good stuff too if you're a Spanish speaker. So that'll be as well. Just follow Rafa, and he'll lead you to the promised land of Mesquite Podcast. So we're on Twitter too and Instagram at the Barcelona Pod. And then you can join our closed Facebook group. We've seen a huge influx of people, and that does give me a bit of promise. You get some cranky heads in there, but I'm liking the activity in the Facebook group. So a lot of new people, welcome to that. And then Patreon, I also want to thank, I did on Monday, thanks to the new patrons as well. You've kind of, for me, just it doesn't reinvigorate me, but just keeps me going in these times. So I really appreciate that. And just some of the nice messages I've received too. It's been nice. The community is kind of where there's some mean people, but we've been propping each other up, and I'm really proud of everybody for doing that. And then I'm on YouTube too, so I don't know if we can prop up the YouTube community. they're really cranky over there, but we try our best. That's Barcelona Podcast. But most importantly, thanks to you, the listeners, for listening to the show. Until next time, we'll talk to you soon, and Forza Barca.